Comedy, next.
I'm Indy Raxon, and I'm a bit obsessed with periods. Not just the blood, but everything in between. While trying to start a family, I discovered just how little I actually knew about my menstrual cycle. So I set off on a mission to find out more. What I discovered blew my mind. So in a new series, I'll be taking you through one cycle day by day, from regenerating organs to some incredible new discoveries and how to hack your cycle. Whether you menstruate or not, this series will improve your life. 28-ish days later, starts next Monday to Friday afternoon at 1:45 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Elizabeth will be looking out for the family when we drop in on Ambridge in half an hour. But first, we've stand-up comedy now on Radio 4 with a second slice of the Orthodox Jewish comedian Ashley Blaker's Goyish Guide to Judaism, first heard in 2019, shortly before the world fell off its hinges, and which opens with a specially recorded statement of support from his biggest fan.
Good evening. My name is Jeremy Corbyn. And I wanted to personally welcome listeners to the new show from my favourite comedian. I was always a big fan of Jackie Mason, Woody Allen, and all the Borscht Belt comics of the 50s and 60s. But no one gets me laughing my kishkas off like Ashley Blaker. He has me shticking myself every time. So I hope you enjoy the show. And to anyone who still thinks I'm an anti-Semite, please stop with these boobamizers already. I'm actually a big Zionist. In fact, I think I can safely say that no one else has ever caused so many British Jews to seriously consider moving to Israel.
This is Ashley Blaker's Goyish Guide to Judaism. Please welcome Ashley Blaker.
Good evening. Shalom to see you, to see you.
Shalom.
I'm glad the audience tonight responded properly. I recently performed in Leeds, and when I came out and said shalom to see you, they all went, nice. I'm not Bruce Forsyth. No, my name is Ashley Blaker, and it's only the second episode of my Goyish Guide to Judaism, and unfortunately already I have to start with a complaint. Don't worry, it's not from a listener. Much more important, this is a complaint from me. You see, the first episode of this show transmitted on Radio 4 in May 2018. And now here is the second episode 17 months later. And people still say the media is run by Jews. Did you realise, since this show was last on Radio 4, there have been over 520 new episodes of The Shipping Forecast? The BBC is essentially saying fishermen and sailors are over 500 times more important than Jews. This is basically an anti-Semitic hate crime. Quite frankly, I have a good mind to report Radio 4 to the Equality and Human Rights Commission. The trouble is, they have so many complaints about the Labour Party, they'd probably not get round to my case for another 10 years. Also, I can't complain about the BBC because my uncle is chairman and my brother doesn't become head of Channel 4 until next year. So let's recap where we'd got to. My aim is to teach you everything you need to know about Orthodox Judaism by going through each of the commandments in the Torah, the five books of Moses. Don't worry, there aren't too many commandments, just a mere 613. And I had intended to do this at a rate of three commandments per show. But now that I realise Radio 4 are spacing out episodes 17 months apart, we probably need to increase the pace a little, otherwise I'm going to still be making this show in 288 years' time. So strap in, let's see how many commandments we can get through tonight.
The Ten Commandments.
Ah, this is more like it. Let's do 10 at once. Clearly, the Ten Commandments are very important ones among the 613. We know this because they're the only ones that were turned into a film. And even better, most of them are pretty easy to understand, so this shouldn't take much time. Sadly, Moses didn't add any drama to the Ten Commandments by counting down, I assume because Top of the Pops hadn't been invented yet. But we can rectify that. At 10, thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's ox. That's a pretty easy one, really. I didn't grow up that observant at all, and yet I can honestly say, with my hand on my heart, that I never once coveted my neighbour's ox. Which is impressive, because he did have a particularly nice one. At 9, thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbour. I think that means you're not allowed to say he didn't have a nice ox when actually he did. Honestly, I don't want to come over all covetous, but my neighbour growing up really had a Megan Fox of an ox. As opposed to a Megan Ox of a fox, which I think you'd be allowed to covet as much as you like. At 8, thou shalt not steal. According to Jewish law, this prohibition is specifically about kidnapping. However, please don't think this means you're allowed to help yourself to some pick and mix at a service station. Stealing is also forbidden elsewhere in the Torah. It's simply that the Ten Commandments discuss capital offences, whereas the punishment for not returning your neighbour's lawnmower is just no longer being able to go round and stare lovingly at his ox. As I say, it really was an absolute stunner. At 7, thou shalt not commit adultery. And this is a good point at which to say to any female admirers in the audience tonight, I am married, so sorry, ladies, this ship sailed. Admittedly, in my case, it's more of a pedalo. Oh, and in case you're thinking it, no, Orthodox Jews don't have sex through a hole in the sheet. That is just a myth. Although if you saw many of the men in my synagogue, you could imagine their wives might want it to be true. At 6, thou shalt not murder, even when it's people you don't like. It's not the Jewish way. What we do is just invite the person to your son's bar mitzvah party, but then sit them by the toilets to show you don't really like them. At 5, thou shalt honour your mother and father. Here's an example of how not to do this. About 8 years ago, when the Jimmy Savile scandal first broke, and all the terrible stories were in the papers, I phoned my mother and said, have you been reading all about Jimmy Savile? And she replied, yes. I was so shocked. I always thought his name had two L's. Now, going on national radio and repeating that my mother thought the most shocking thing about serial predator Jimmy Savile was the spelling of his name would definitely be a violation of this commandment. I did it now strictly for illustrative purposes. At 4, thou shalt remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. This one is actually a lot harder than it sounds because we're not allowed to work on the Sabbath, and the rabbis say there are 39 definitions of work, including planting, ploughing, threshing, and winnowing. And if I ever find out what winnowing means, I'm sure I'll realise how much I'm missing out not being able to do it on a Saturday afternoon. Due to these laws, there are many things we can't do, from turning on light switches to using mobile phones. Now, you can ask non-Jewish neighbours to come round and sort something for you, but with 3 small conditions. Firstly, as I said last time, we're not allowed to ask direct. Instead, we have to hint and say things like, what a shame I forgot to turn my lights on. And I'm now sat in pitch black. Wink, wink. Secondly, the Gentile must derive some benefit himself. You can't say, what a pity I'm not allowed to write my Radio 4 script today and hope he'll write it for you. I tried this by knocking on Michael McIntyre's door last Saturday afternoon, and he wasn't having it at all. And thirdly, it has to be in the spirit of the Sabbath. Getting a Gentile round to turn on the TV so you can watch the football isn't allowed. Unless it's Spurs playing, in which case it's compulsory. At 3, thou shalt not desecrate the name of God. Orthodox Jews are so strict about this, we aren't even allowed to write the three-letter English word God. To make sure it's not misused, we have to write it G-D. Kind of like Reese-Mogg. But different, because that name you can desecrate as much as you like. At two, thou shalt not bow down to any idol. The most famous idol ever was probably the Golden Calf, which sounds like the name of a pub, but was actually an enormous statue which the Jewish people managed to fashion for melting jewellery despite being in the middle of the desert. Kind of like how in every episode of the A-Team, no matter where they were, Mr. T would always be able to make an armoured truck with an oxyacetylene torch. Thankfully, these days, Jews don't have this urge to pray to idols. If we saw a giant cow now, we'd just turn it into salt beef sandwiches. And coming in at number one, I am your God, and thou shalt have no other God. Some people clearly don't take this prohibition that seriously, because according to birth records in the US, last year, five American parents literally named their sons God. However, neither Richard Dawkins or Sam Harris have met these children in person and refuse to believe that they really exist.
Commandment number 175. Thou shalt dress Jewish.
Quick jokes that you'd find in a Jewish Christmas cracker. Little boy is walking in Stamford Hill with his father and says, all these men with silk coats, long beards and furry hats, who are they? The father says, Hasidim. The boy replies, I see them too, but who are they? Sadly, Orthodox Jews don't tend to have Christmas crackers. Nothing against Christians, but Jews don't celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, mainly because he had the same initials as Jeremy Corbyn. If you're listening to a repeat of this in 2020, remember Jeremy Corbyn? He was that beardy fella who used to be leader of the Labour Party. Alternatively, he's the man who's now Prime Minister, in which case, greetings from New York. And would the last Jewish person to leave the UK please turn out the lights? But if it's the Sabbath, remember not to turn them out yourself. Hint to your neighbour. Now, my own religious journey from being a secular Jew began with wearing a skull cap. But to make it more modern, the first one I wore genuinely had the crest of my football team on it. As you can probably tell from my very strong accent, I'm a big Liverpool supporter. When I go to games as a strictly Orthodox Jew, I'm an even more unlikely sight in Liverpool than a Boris Johnson tribute night. By the way, people often ask me if it was hard to go from being a fanatical Liverpool supporter to being a fanatical Jew, and the answer is no, it was easy. All I needed to do was learn a few new songs. You can't go to synagogue and start chanting, "One chosen people, there's only one chosen people." They don't even like it if you sing, he's thick, he's fat, he once dressed as a cat, Josh Galloway. Josh Galloway.
Commandment number 351. Thou shalt develop obsessive compulsive disorder.
I joke, but if you don't have OCD before becoming an Orthodox Jew, you'll definitely develop it pretty quickly. So, for example, you know how before eating a meal, Christians just say, bless us for the food we're about to eat. We need to remember a different blessing for every type of food. Fruit and fibre, fruit cake, fruit cocktail, fruit juice, fruit leather, fruit loops, fruit punch, fruit roll, fruit soup, fruity pebbles. I have no idea what fruity pebbles are, let alone what blessing I need to say before eating them. Jewish MasterChef would be an absolute nightmare. You get 3 hours cooking time, but most of it would be spent trying to work out which blessing to say. And I'm sure the rabbis are just trying to make it hard for us. So for banana split, there's one blessing if you really want the ice cream. And then there's another blessing if you really want the banana. No one has ever eaten a banana split for the banana. If you did, you'd just eat a banana. No wonder Jews only eat chicken soup and salt beef sandwiches. We don't actually like them. It's just we don't want to have to remember all these thousands of blessings. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. So Jewish men have to pray wearing these leather boxes and straps, which are incredibly holy, but look a little like bondage gear. And being the ideal religion for someone with OCD, there is so much to obsess about. Whether the boxes are perfectly square, whether they're perfectly black, whether the straps are the minimum width. And of course, the rabbis being the rabbis aren't going to make this easy. Should we measure the width in centimetres? No, that would be confusing because half the world doesn't know metric measurements. So what do we use instead? The width of a kernel of barley. That's better. Now no one in the world knows how wide they should be. Then in October, things get really nuts with the Festival of Tabernacles, when we have to sleep in a hut outside just when it gets cold. Presumably, this is to commemorate the time when the Jews in the wilderness all caught pneumonia by sleeping in a hut outside just when it got cold. And how high does the hut have to be? We don't measure this in centimetres. We don't even measure in barley kernels. No, no. We measure in fists. Please feel free at this point to write your own joke about using fists. I am an Orthodox Jew and couldn't possibly make that kind of joke. And in case you're wondering how wide a fist is, predictably none of the rabbis agree. So one rabbi says it's 3.15 inches, whereas another rabbi claims it's 4 inches. Typical man, always claiming it's another inch bigger than it really is.
Commandment number 604. Thou shalt endure the embarrassment of praying in public.
Yeah, praying in public can be tough. And it's hard to explain to most people because Christians don't have this issue. They can pray whenever they want. And even if you're religious, you may only go to church on Sunday mornings. But we Jews have 3 prayers a day, while Islam has 5 prayers a day. Fair dues to any Muslim listeners, you win this one 5-3. I imagine we used to have 5 prayers a day, but we haggled God down. But not only do we have 3 prayers a day, they have to be performed at certain times between sunrise and sunset, which change during the course of the year. That's why this show is having an interval tonight. We need a 15-minute break in the recording so that Jews in the audience can go and pray Maariv, our nighttime ritual. Muslims can pray Isha, their nighttime ritual. And everyone else can go to the bar and get pissed. The Christian nighttime ritual. To save us the embarrassment of having to quickly pray in public, many places like airports now have multi-faith prayer rooms. But the trouble with these things, sad admission, is they bring out my competitive side. And I find myself trying to prove I'm praying with more passion and concentration than anyone else. It's like a Jewish-Muslim pray-off. So I go in and see a Muslim guy on the prayer mat, so I get my leather straps on. He's bowing, so I'm shaking. He prays out loud, so I pray louder. And I don't leave it there. I start doing crazy stuff that I don't even need to do at that time of year. I'm building a hut to sleep in. I'm measuring the width of a kernel of barley. I pity any poor Catholic who wanders in. To compete with us, he'd have to build his own confession box. The only religions that can compete with us for public prayer is obviously the Hare Krishnas. But rather than be embarrassed, they revel in it and try to get others to join in. And I don't know who invented it. I assume it was a Mr. Harold Krishna. But whoever it was an absolute genius. Because he really understood how to do outreach work. He realised that if you want to get a load of random people praying with you in the middle of a big city, you need the prayers to be pretty simple. There's not a lot of knowledge to acquire here. It's just Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. That's brilliant. No different blessings to learn, no measuring kernels of barley. It's just Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. I actually think Judaism can learn a lot from other religions like this. Think how many more Jews would start coming to synagogue if our prayers just consisted of salmon bagels. Salmon bagels. Bagels, bagels. Salmon, salmon. You get rabbis on the street in Golders Green trying to get Jewish men to put on the leather straps. Too long, too involved. It should just be, are you Jewish? If they say yes, give them a tambourine or a drum, let them come and sing the salmon bagel song.
Commandment number 162. Thou shalt suffer anti-Semitism.
Right, time to get a little bit more serious. There's no question that anti-Semitism is on the rise in the UK, particularly during the last 20 minutes or so. But in truth, anti-Semitism has always been present. It just manifests itself in different ways. So, for example, I went to a school called Haberdashers Asks in Hertfordshire, where despite there being lots of Jewish boys, oddly, the teachers were often hugely anti-Semitic. Or perhaps that should be because they taught so many Jewish boys. The teachers were often hugely anti-Semitic. So every year on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when 40% of the school would be absent, our biology teacher would apparently start lessons by saying, "Let's work really hard today so the Jews can't catch up." Imagine saying that now. He'd be in the shadow cabinet. And as a result of rising anti-Semitism, there are many observant Jewish men who are now very nervous to wear a skull cap to work. So what these men do is, clever Jews, they go to work wearing their skull cap under a baseball cap. But the thing is, I just can't believe any non-Jews will have been fooled by this. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but men in suits don't wear baseball caps. If you're walking in the city and you see a man wearing a very smart suit, double-cuff shirt, silk tie, expensive shoes, and then topped off with a New York Yankees baseball cap, he is clearly either an Orthodox Jew trying to hide it, or he's going to a fancy dress party as a very bad Eminem. I mean, look at me. Would everyone here say I look Jewish?
Yes.
Yes, yes. Right, okay, so we all agree I look very Jewish. Look at me now. Don't look Jewish at all, do I? Now I look like Dr. Dre. Straight out of Golders Green. I still look like an Orthodox Jew, I just now look like one you wouldn't want your children to be left alone with. Let's be honest, only an absolute grade A tosspot would go around wearing a suit and a baseball cap. Donald Trump does it for a start.
Commandment number 287. Thou shalt keep kosher.
So our final commandment tonight is keeping kosher. But the trouble is there are very few Jews in the UK, hence there are hardly any kosher restaurants. We are much worse off than Muslims who have restaurants everywhere, including over 100 halal branches of Chicken Cottage. On the other hand, we're much better off than Muslims because there are no kosher branches of Chicken Cottage. And even if you can find one, kosher restaurants aren't really like any other restaurant in the UK. In my lifetime, there have been literally hundreds of them in North London, but never more than 20 at a time. Some have lasted years, some barely weeks. In fact, it's a genuine ambition of mine to one day write a history of the UK's kosher restaurants entitled, "Our Credit Card Machine Isn't Working Yet." It's either going to be called that or The Fires Next Week. I joke, but it is one of the mysteries of the modern world that there have been more fires in kosher restaurants down the Golders Green Road than they've ever had in Coronation Street. If this was a soap opera, people would call it far-fetched. I wouldn't be surprised to find out there'd been a kosher restaurant on the roof of Notre Dame. And not only does your food need to be strictly kosher, it needs to be the right food, which might not be as obvious as you think. I mean, I bet if I asked any non-Jewish listener to name a Jewish food, you'd say chicken soup or salmon bagels. But if you moved to Golders Green and spent a week going to bar mitzvahs, weddings and synagogue events, and then I asked you to name me a traditional Jewish food, I guarantee your answer would now be sushi. It's the weirdest thing. When I was growing up, Jewish food was prepared by an overweight, sweaty man with a long beard dipping in and out of the chicken soup. Now, Jewish food is prepared by a Japanese man stood chopping raw fish all day. Because Jews can't do anything without sushi. But what do I know? Maybe sushi was always a Jewish food. Maybe my ancestors in the shtetl loved a bit of sushi. Maybe if you went back to 19th century Lithuania, you'd hear a woman saying, Yankala, when you go to the market today, don't forget the seaweed. I'm making salmon urimaki for dinner. But I don't think so. I haven't seen Fiddler on the Roof for years, but I don't remember Topol celebrating his daughter's engagement with a spicy tuna and avocado roll. I'd love to think in Japan, go into any of their supermarkets and there's a fat rabbi in the corner boiling salt beef. Right now on Japanese radio, there's a stand-up comedian going, when do we all become so obsessed with chicken soup and matzo balls? I always think the weirdest place for sushi is a circumcision, simply because you know it's only a matter of time before somebody thinks, we've got the Japanese sushi chef stood there chopping the rolls. Seems like a waste of money to pay for someone to do the circumcision as well. We have four sons and we didn't have sushi at any of their circumcisions. But quick digression, this is so strange. After my eldest son's circumcision, the Moel, that's the name of the man who does it, he handed me a folded up tissue with my son's foreskin in. I said, what do you want me to do with it? And I promise this is true. He said it's customary to take it and bury it in the garden. He didn't say whether it's for good luck or just to give foxes the strangest snack they'll ever have. The next week I was at work and I'd forgotten it was in that tissue. So when I sneezed, I thought half my nose had fallen off. Oh, my septum! Oh, thank God it's just a foreskin. Try explaining that sentence to your colleagues. But anyway, he said bury it in the garden, so like a complete idiot, I went and did it. And I actually kept watering it to see what would happen. Whatever you do, don't try it. Because 2 years later, in our back garden, we had grown a 6-foot Gentile. His name's Keith. I say 6 foot, but when he gets excited, he can actually grow as big as 12 foot. Well, I'm afraid that is all we have time for, but we have at least made up some ground this evening. You're probably thinking at this point that there seems to be a lot of rules, and you might wonder why I still want to do this. But the truth is, the OCD geek in me loves the fact that Orthodox Judaism is incredibly difficult. All Christians have to do is turn the other cheek, enjoy Cliff Richard, and drive a car with a little fish on it. No wonder there are so many more Christians in the world. It's a piece of cake compared to being Jewish. So shalom to see you, to see you.
Shalom.
Thank you for listening, and God bless. Or if you're not religious, just bless. Ashley Blaker's Goyish Guide to Judaism was written and performed by me, Ashley.